offer a few more reflections on the practice, reminders about the practice. I thought I'd start with reflecting a little bit about attention and mindfulness. Attention is that function in our minds that selects something out of experience to turn to. It's a different function of mind than mindfulness. Mindfulness, we could say, is that function that reflects or has us be aware of what is happening. Kind of like a mirror just reflects what's in front of it. Mindfulness is like that. It reflects what is happening. Mindfulness isn't particularly choosing something to pay attention to. That belongs to attention. That function belongs to attention. I know when I first started practicing, there was a little bit of confusion I had about these two. And I thought that if I wasn't actively choosing what to pay attention to, then it meant I wasn't being mindful. And so there was a little bit of confusion between these two in my mind. I think we all can know with a simple kind of thought experiment that there is a difference between attention and mindfulness. If you think about some time when you were doing something, whether it was walking down a street or driving a car or preparing a meal, having a conversation where you were not at all mindful. There was still something in there that was allowing you to respond to what someone said or did, allowing you to navigate other traffic, allowing you to walk down the street without falling down or walking into trees or cars. There's that function that happens. When we are not mindful, attention is attending to things. Fortunately, it's a great thing that that's the case. And so we can be attending to things. The mind can be attending to things when we're not mindful. But still, that doesn't necessarily kind of disentangle being mindful from directing the attention. Still, potentially a little bit of habit there or familiarity perhaps with practices that use a directed attention to cultivate mindfulness. And there can be a slightly different experience in the experience of being aware when we are directing the attention and when we are not directing the attention. A different way that the experience is felt when we're directing the attention and when we're not directing the attention. And probably most of us learned about mindfulness through some form of practice where we chose an object to be aware of. Many of us learn that way. It's one of the easiest ways to begin to know that we're aware and present when we can know that we're choosing to pay attention to an object in the present moment. But when we let go of that intentionality, and I often make an analogy about attention. It's a function of our minds that is amenable to conscious control. We can choose. We can pick up a thought in our mind and reflect, I'd like to pay attention to my feet right now. And then we can do that. So there is that possibility. We can choose to attend to something. But if we are not actively or consciously choosing what to pay attention to, then essentially our conditioning will choose something to pay attention to. The conditions that are unfolding in our lives, there will be something that attention is drawn to, and attention will go to something. And so it is amenable to conscious control, but it will also continue when we are not consciously choosing. Attention is functioning in every moment. So it will be happening whether we're choosing it or not, much like the breath. We can consciously choose to control the breath, but if we don't consciously choose that, the breath continues. So it's kind of like that. We can direct the attention, but we don't have to. And mindfulness is a separate thing from that directing of the attention. Mindfulness can simply be aware when the processes of body and mind choose to attend to something. So an example of this is in sitting meditation. If you are sitting and have your eyes closed and you are noticing a variety of things in your body, just aware, and then there's a loud sound that happens outside. Often the attention will shift to that sound. This is a very natural function of our minds. It's a process that supports us as human beings to become attuned when something sudden happens like that. So we will, most of the time, unless we're really focused on something else, you know, unless the mind is kind of dived into something, it will shift attention when that happens. And we don't have to choose to do that. We don't have to consciously think, I'm going to stop paying attention to that and start paying attention to that loud sound out there. It happens automatically. So this is how attention, this is one way attention functions. Then there are also habits and patterns of mind, that things we have chosen to pay attention to a lot in our lives that tend to draw our attention. So for myself, being of the aversive nature, I've attended a lot to unpleasant experience. And when I walk into a room, that's very often where the attention goes first. Just watching what happens when I walk into a room. It will often go to something that's a little off in my view. There's a spot on the carpet, or the color of that wall, it looks a little faded, or something like that. So that's kind of our habits, what we have attended to, how we have been shaped in our past. That also will have a role in selecting or choosing what the mind attends to. And so in this practice of receptive awareness, we explore the possibility of letting go of directing the attention, of consciously directing the attention, and see, kind of settling back and seeing, how is the attention unfolding? What are the conditions and how is the attention happening? What is the mind attending to in this moment? This aspect of attention, noticing when the attention shifts from one experience to another, this is a really useful thing to become curious about. Noticing that shift of attention. Often, I would say, when we don't notice the shift of attention, so if in the sitting that sound happened outside and you were unaware that the attention shifted, you know, the attention shifted, it just shifted, and you didn't recognize, mindfulness didn't recognize the attention shifting. It happened and the mind just kind of went there without being aware of that shift of attention. That happens a lot, by the way, and it is a prime place where the mind will wander out of the present moment and into thought. And so becoming interested in how the attention shifts from one thing to another, you don't have to do much with that. Just knowing, oh, the attention's on this right now. And then feeling or recognizing when it shifts to something else and something else and something else. Sometimes for people who are newer with this practice, that experience of the shifting attention can feel like the mind is all over the place. It can feel like the mind is not settled because we are used to having practices or having the sense of being stabilizing with a particular experience. But in this practice, if we can be aware of the shift of attention, we are continuing awareness. And awareness is our kind of ground or where we emphasize the practice. Are you aware? Aware of this experience? Aware of the attention being drawn to something else? There's a kind of a feeling that can come with that kind of pull or, you know, choosing the attention, choosing to go someplace else. The conditions that are shaping that and the movement of mind there. There's a way that that can feel, that we can get familiar with that experience of the shift of attention. Sometimes it feels smooth and flowy, one thing to another. Sometimes it feels jumpy, like something pops in just like that without any warning. And so this getting familiar with this shift of attention, and not having a judgment about the fact that the attention is shifting. Just you're looking at conditioning. You're looking at your mind. So I mentioned earlier that I'd say a little bit more about walking practice. And this particular exploration around the shift of attention is a really useful practice to, or kind of thing to recognize. I wouldn't say it's something to do so much. I mean, this Sayadaw says sometimes, you know, what I say isn't anything to do. It's what you might be able to notice. And so when you're in walking practice and in observing the mind while walking, being aware while walking, one of the things that will undoubtedly happen, because we're engaged in the world a little bit more especially, is a shifting of attention, a shifting from object to object, seeing different objects, a shift from the experience of what we could call settling back and just receiving, seeing, and looking at something. Noticing that shift between seeing and looking, seeing being more kind of receptive and open, and looking being more directed. Now, here the word directed doesn't mean that we've directed it, but that the mind has focused on something. And that can happen very naturally too. If you're walking down the street and a child who's playing nearby, you know, kicks a ball and the ball comes scooting in front of you, your attention will probably focus on that ball, because movement will direct, will grab the attention, will focus the mind. You will look at the ball. And so that you may have been previously just kind of taking in the larger terrain of seeing, not looking at anything in particular, but then at some point the attention can go right down to looking because of some movement that happened, or because there's a new splotch of color or a new shape. Something unusual may draw the attention. This is a natural part of the process of being human, these shifts. And so getting curious about the shift between seeing and looking, especially while walking. Also, we can explore a similar kind of thing between hearing, taking in the ambient sounds, and when the mind shifts to listening, shift between hearing and listening. As you start to get familiar with that, you might then begin to notice that sometimes the mind can go right from looking to listening. There's something the attention is drawn to, and then a sound comes up and we're listening to that sound, a motorcycle going by, and we are listening to that sound. So noticing these distinctions, these ways that the mind works, this is essentially an exploration of the mind. And as we notice that shift of attention, when we notice the attention shift from one thing to another, or from seeing to looking, you might just be curious about what the relationship is. I mean, there's a relationship often when the attention shifts to what it has shifted to. You might just be curious about that. For myself, again, being the aversive type, I noticed that, you know, the attention shifting from one unpleasant thing to another, and there's like aversion there, like this habit, strong habit of that. And I also noticed at one point when I was at Shui Yu Min that any time, most of the time, not all the time, but many times when the attention collapsed down on something, you know, when the attention went from seeing to like looking at an object, almost always that object that the mind chose to look at was something that the mind identified as unpleasant. Again, a habit. It's not that everything that was happening around me was unpleasant, but that's what this mind chose to navigate to. Or another way this can happen, that's what this mind applied once it landed on an object. It applied unpleasantness to it because that's its habit. One example of that from a retreat I did at IMS at one point, I was doing walking meditation and just slow walking. This was when I was doing more Mahasi style practice, and I turned around at the end of my path and somebody's shoes were sitting at the end of my walking path. The attention collapsed down onto those shoes and immediately experienced aversion. You know, whose shoes are those and why are they at the end of my walking path? Shoes at the end are shoes. They're just like neutral. But this mind applied aversion and unpleasantness. The unpleasantness of the shoes probably followed the aversion that somebody was invading my space. Ideas were involved in that whole process. It wasn't the sense of the shoes. It wasn't just shoes that was creating that aversion. There was so much going on in the mind. See anything more about walking to share? Just a few things, maybe, about walking. In this style of practice, we are just, as I said earlier, being aware while walking. And so walk at a pace that feels natural, that feels comfortable, in a way that finding a comfortable pace can be akin to relaxing in our sitting practice. That might be a place to begin a formal walking practice period, is it's just finding a way to be relaxed while walking. And then just notice, are you aware while walking? And what is obvious? Receiving experience, again, rather than directing the attention to feet or legs or body even, what is obvious? Often in walking, seeing and hearing play quite a large role. And so noticing that, noticing where the attention is while walking. Sometimes it'll come into the body. Sometimes it'll be very internal. I find it interesting to explore that difference between when I'm walking, when the mind kind of goes in into the body, kind of almost withdraws from the larger visual field. It stays connected with it. It's not like the seeing disappears, but there's more attention kind of internal. Sometimes I find it interesting to notice the difference between the internal and then when the attention kind of goes more external, and to not have any agenda. I've noticed at times my mind can create some kind of agenda. It's better to be broadly aware than it is for the attention to kind of come inside. You can have that idea. And then I can try to make my mind be more broadly aware, but that's stressful. In that moment, that might be stressful. So just watching kind of the natural rhythms of what our minds do. Sometimes it'll settle in the body and just be very happy there. And then the attention may get drawn to the seeing realm. Just watching, where does the attention move between? There's nothing better that we have to pay attention to. Nothing other than what's here. If the mind is able to meet that, what's here, there's nothing better than that. No better object. Any object, any experience has the nature of being impermanent, unreliable, and not self. Those understandings are available with every single experience. We don't have to find some other better experience with which we can have insight. Just this. So with walking, just notice where is the attention? And you might also notice, sometimes I find in walking, there can be kind of a very lively responsiveness to what's happening. Mental activity, thoughts about what's happening, or emotions or moods that arise with the experience of walking. And so being aware of what is here. And as I said earlier, too, just a little bit on when we can't just meet what's arising. When the momentum of some kind of reactivity is stronger than our capacity to be aware, we need to learn to distinguish, to discern when mindfulness can be with what's arising and when mindfulness gets hooked and gets pulled out of mindfulness. You need to learn to distinguish between those. So when can we be with something that's arising and when is the attention just swamped by what's arising? Now, the simple fact of not liking experience or being averse to experience, there's a difference between aversion arising about an experience and not being able to be present. So if there is aversion arising about an experience, useful to know the aversion, may not be useful to continue to have the attention, the emphasis of the attention be on the thing around which the aversion is connected to. So this is the usefulness of checking the attitude. And so this is a useful time to check the attitude. If you're noticing that there's a little bit of struggle in the practice, a little challenge, a little stress or a sense of difficulty in the practice, check the attitude. See if there can be an opening to the relationship to what's happening. And so there's something happening and we don't like it. If we can simply know that, this unpleasant thing is happening and not liking is happening, there's no problem. The mind can simply be aware of that. So the simple fact of aversion or not liking or greed or confusion arising is not what I mean by being overwhelmed or being pulled out of mindfulness. We need to explore. Is it possible to be aware while this not liking is happening, while this confusion is happening? To take some trust and some confidence in the capacity of awareness, in that capacity. So can we be aware of what is happening and know any reactivity that may be associated with it? Then it can be useful to also kind of track or be curious about, is the, as you are attending to the experience, if there's some difficulty there, for instance, if there is some aversion there with an unpleasant experience, if the aversion is kind of coming and going, it strengthens a little bit, then it's seen more clearly and it diminishes, it's kind of wobbling around a particular kind of valence, and you're able to basically know that there's aversion getting stronger, getting weaker, then there's learning happening. Some of the learning that may be happening there is how unpleasant it is to be in aversion. That's learning. There's wisdom to that. We think it's a problem, but it's actually, you know, mindfulness and wisdom beginning to point out that that state of mind is not a pleasant place to be. So it's learning. And yet there can be times as we are attending to something that we feel a kind of an increase in the reactivity. It gets stronger and stronger and stronger. It feels like it's like tumbling down. It's just reinforcing itself. If you start to see that happen, that there's a kind of an increasing in the reactivity as you're trying to be with it, that might be time to shift to something else, to choose another object. Direct the attention in that case. Direct the attention to your hands or your feet, or use metta practice if that works for you. Whatever works for you to help the mind to become more balanced. In this retreat, it being an experienced student's retreat, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about ways to work with difficulty, because you all have your own skills with that. I'm not going to spend time in the hall talking about that. It's perfectly fine to bring that up in the practice meetings, and we can talk about it there to your heart's content. We can talk about how to navigate difficulty there, and work with it. So, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time in the hall. You know, often on this kind of retreat, I'll spend a talk or even two talking about how to work with difficulty. I'm not going to do that here. I'm going to assume that you basically have the skills that you need to navigate, and we can fine tune it in the practice meetings. It's important if that reactivity is increasing. It's not a failure of mindfulness in some way if the mindfulness is not able to meet that experience. It's conditions that are happening in this moment. Conditions that are supporting mindfulness are not strong enough to allow it to meet that experience. The strength or the momentum of that habit of mind stronger than the capacity to be mindful of it. So we need to, in some ways, honor the strength of that reactivity. We're not trying to repress or push it away, but we're also not attending to it. So there's a kind of a middle way in working with those kinds of things. Neither repressing nor expressing. So I mentioned just a moment ago that if you're noticing a little bit of struggle in the meditation, that's a good time to check the relationship with the experience, check the attitude. A couple other good times to check the attitude. One is if it feels like it's going really well. That's a good time to check the attitude. There can be subtle greed when it's going well. It can be revealed if you check the attitude. I've noticed this myself, just really a very settled mind state and checking the attitude, a fear that it wasn't going to continue, a subtle trying to make it continue. So there can be some subtle kinds of greed or aversion or delusion, kind of hidden, connected to a very, what seems to be a very tranquil, wholesome place of mind, or a very clear place of mind. There can be attachment to the practice. So useful to check there, but also really useful to check there, not only because you might see some greed or aversion or delusion, but also because it helps us to get familiar with what it's like. Sometimes in that place, what's happening in the mind is wise attitude. When it's going well, the mind is balanced and at ease and calm. And we might not be clearly recognizing that. So when it feels like it's going well, that's also an opportunity. And so I want to caution you, you know, if you're in the checking the attitude when it's going well, kind of preferencing or looking for something that's wrong or looking for some kind of greed in the mind there, maybe you could start by saying, is this what wise attitude feels like? You know, is this wise attitude? Is this balanced mind? And get familiar with that. Sometimes when things are going well, we're just kind of taking it for granted. We don't really get familiar with what the mind is like there. To leave some time if there's any questions. I had some more thoughts, but let's break the recording now and we'll see if there's any questions or reflections.